still of any use? Surely some form of the same question haunted Saul in the singular as he sat in darkness, neither eating nor drinking, an unwilling guest in a house on the street called Straight for some reason. Likewise, Simon Peter and the rest of the disciples must have asked this of each other in the aftermath of Jesus' death, prompting them initially to return to their lives as fishermen. It is the question entertained when a blinding light shatters our certainty and then calls us by name. It is the question we ask after a season of risking our lives on some venture that appears to have failed. In fact, at every turn in the road, if we have our wits about us, I think we ask this question of our usefulness. I think of the young, after years of preparation, when graduation is in sight, but no one is calling them by name to be of use, or even calling, they ask. In midlife, when you are weary in well-doing, wondering whether you can muster the passion to keep on keeping on, or whether instead a new passion will propel you into some version of a midlife crisis, you ask, am I still of any use? And with more years behind some of us than in front of us, given the things we have done and the things we have left undone, the consequences intended and unintended, we ask, am I still of any use? When we ask the question of our usefulness, we mostly lean in to hear the response the world has to give us, measuring ourselves against the usual metrics, a chore when we are little, a job, or if we are lucky, a vocation, a house full of dependents, to name a few of the outward signs that we are valued, that we have a role to play, a contribution to make. Knowing that we are needed in a family, a community, an institution, a cause, a company. Having some tangible evidence of our impact on something lasting and larger than ourselves. Being remembered or included, no matter our age. This is how the world around us answers Bonhoeffer's question in the affirmative. But there comes a day, and I'll add a day if we are blessed, a season in life, a turn in the road, when every evidence of our usefulness is called into question by the very world that once affirmed our utility. So a job is lost, a nexus of relationships gone, a cause disappoints you, the children leave home, retirement approaches, your mind or body begins to fail you, compelling you to ask all over again, am I still of any use? But now it feels as though you have been blinded on the road to Damascus or just come off a disastrous week in Jerusalem. who has been waiting for just this opening, just this crack, this break in the action, may enter in, also unasked, to use you still in the service of God's kingdom come. If the stories are any clue, notice in the first place that Saul and Peter were the last two people on earth the world would have thought to use. I know I'm skating on thin ice to say this, but Saul must have been a Ted Cruz sort of character. Before that day on the road to Damascus, a zealot who was the only true believer, the only pure upholder of the law, the only righteous man capable of doing God's will, and a master debater to boot. I cannot imagine even his fellow Pharisees liking him very much. Ananias, who would be used by God as God's means of grace towards Saul, was afraid for his life when God sent him to lay hands on this murderous man. Ananias says, "Lord, I have heard from many about this man and pleads not to be sent." But in response, God tells Ananias that Saul is an instrument whom I have chosen. We're done with the Ted Cruz analogy at this point. An instrument chosen of God to be of use, meaning that the rest of Saul's life would not belong to Saul. It would belong to God. Meaning Saul would no longer be the master of his own fate. He would be given a destiny by the God who had destined him in love from the foundation of the world. To speak of choosing your own destiny, writes a theologically wired political theorist named Glenn Tinder, to speak of choosing your own destiny is a misunderstanding of human beings and their powers, a misunderstanding at the heart of the present crisis of civilization. Perhaps people can create styles of life and control the general order of their daily existence. But their destinies must be given to them. One carries out a destiny under constraint and not as an act of play, improvisation, or spontaneous self-expression. The constraint comes from the life that one feels called upon to live. Likewise, of all the disciples, except Judas, Peter's denial of Jesus in the courtyard should have made him useless to the early church going forward. He too was a zealot, perhaps a more endearing one, though equally irritating. I mean, feel the burn. Utterly certain, I'm just trying to be relevant, utterly certain that he would stand by Jesus to the end, the only one who has been consistent through his whole life, until he denied him three times. A handful of days later, when the risen Christ appears on the shore, Peter shamelessly swims to him, exhibiting an ego strength that is was Peter's Damascus Road. When the conversation was finished, when the illusion of his own usefulness was shattered, only then was Peter of use to God. From that day forward, Jesus said to him, "You will be taken where you do not wish to go in the service of God's kingdom come." So in the first place, it is very often the very people blindsided by their own brokenness who are still of use to God. In fact, they are particularly of use to God. God calls them by name, commands them to follow, and gives them a destiny whose usefulness may not be apparent until they lie to die. And therefore, in the second place, assuming that you are that broken person, notice that as your life is used by God in the service of God's kingdom come, your life ceases to be your own, ceases to be all about you, about your success or personal achievement, or even about your highest ideals. When Christ calls you, to paraphrase Bonhoeffer, he bids you come and die. Die to the life you have lived to yourself and be born anew to the life given you by God to live. Not the work that you choose, Martin Luther wrote of our usefulness to God. Not the sufferings you devise, but the road that is clean contrary to all that you choose or contrive or desire. That is the road you must take. To that I call you. And in that, you must be my disciple. To be clear, Saul was still zealous when he became Paul. But the zeal once directed toward his own righteousness was redeemed and used for 2,000 years by God as the means of God's grace toward those of us called out and into Christ's church. The reason we are here this morning is because God stopped Paul in his tracks. Likewise, Peter's passion before the crucifixion was spent on being the first, the best, the most courageous, albeit the most impetuous of the disciples. But after breakfast that morning, his ego mortally wounded and his sense of self shaken, God redeemed and used Peter's passion to proclaim the gospel as only the forgiven can, with a sense of urgency born of grace. Of this turn, this transformation, this redemption, Bonhoeffer would write in his cell in Tegel Prison, that one must abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, whether it be a saint or a converted sinner. Rather, he said, one must live unreservedly in life's duties, problems, successes, and failures, experiences, and perplexities, because in doing so, we throw ourselves completely into the hands of God. Taking seriously not our own sufferings, but the suffering of God in the world. How can success make us arrogant or failure lead us astray, he asks, when we share in God's suffering through a life of this kind? This same man who had asked only 3 years before whether he and his co-conspirators were still of any use, given who they had become, in what And in the context of the confessing church attempting to live out its destiny, are we, as followers of Jesus Christ, however haltingly, still of any use? Until they too